most expensive election in human history. More money, obscene amounts of money being poured into this election. We've also seen an election that's particularly contentious. To all appearances, it really feels right now like we are a very divided country. And yet, on one issue, I would argue that we're more united than ever. If you look at the polls, it shows a cross-party line. Republicans, Democrats, third-party voters. There's unanimity around the problem. There's a real frustration with the way that money is influencing the political process, and a desire to reform that, to fix that, and to bring all voices back into the democratic process. So what we're seeing is a time when we're at an all-time low point with the problem, money in the political process, and yet we're also seeing a resurgence of grassroots effort to come and try to fix that. And across the country, even in this election cycle, we're seeing local reform efforts. Right here in Portland, we're working through the city council, but on the ballot in Berkeley, California, Howard County, Maryland, there are two local areas that are trying to pass a similar reform on the ballot. And then in Washington State, we're seeing a different model, but toward the same ends of a proposal that's on the ballot. We also see Washington State, California, both have ballot measures to try to call on Congress to overturn Citizens United. Missouri has a ballot measure for contribution limits. So we're really seeing these reforms bubble up.
So Citizens United, rather than having the Supreme Court, the federal Supreme Court, overturn it, states can actually overturn it on a state-by-state basis?
Well, what we've seen with the courts is that in recent years they've been dismantling our whole regulatory system to keep to rein in money in the process and make sure that the money that is in the political process is very transparent. The Citizens United Supreme Court ruling is the most known, but there have actually been numerous rulings. And even here in Oregon, we have court decisions and attorney general opinions that are restricting what we can do to rein in money. Oregon is one of only six states that doesn't even put any limits on contributions to campaigns, which makes us a real outlier. But those are court opinions and court rulings that are limiting us. For a while, as this dismantling has been happening, it's been unclear what's left to us and if there was anything that would actually hold up in court, what we could do. But in recent years, we're really starting to see the things that we still can do that really make a difference, like this open and accountable elections reform that we're trying to pass here in the city.
Now, you mentioned the city council and passing this in the city. Can you talk about what happened at the city council hearing?
Yeah. So last week, the city council had a hearing on this open and accountable elections reform. The city hall was packed. It was definitely a very lively hearing. About 60 people signed up to testify, and the hearing went on for about 3.5 hours. It was packed to capacity. What we saw was tremendous support for reform. Actually, everyone there voiced support for reform. Really, the only concerns were raised by the auditor and a former auditor, and they supported the idea of reform in principle, but they were raising concerns about how it's implemented that will need to get worked out.
So that's kind of like housekeeping then, those concerns. It's not anything major, not a major opposition to the plan.
I mean, they're important concerns, and we have to make sure we implement this correctly. But I would say, yes, it's not signaling opposition to the reform itself. So we saw broad support and diverse support. I mean, one of the things that was really striking at the hearing was seeing all these people testify representing a broad range of organizations, and then many people just speaking on their own behalf as private citizens. There were over 30 organizations represented through the coalition that we've built to promote this reform that represent communities of color, immigrants and refugees, youth, elders, low-income, middle-income people, people from underrepresented neighborhoods, environmentalists, democracy advocates, so a real broad sector of our communities.
Now, you mentioned that broad support. What are the obstacles, then, to making these electoral reforms here locally?
Yeah, My understanding is that the Portland Business Association opposes this. And certainly when we had a similar but a different reform that aimed at similar goals, voter-owned elections, they did everything that they could to try to get that overturned before it really could be worked out and effective. So I have no doubt that they will also weigh in opposition here and might even take it to the ballot if the city council passes it. We'll have to see. They were invited to speak at the city council, and someone from the Portland Business Association was there prepared to speak, but when she saw how much overwhelming support there was, I think she decided not to speak out publicly at that time.
So even though they weren't voicing their opposition at the city council meeting, do you have any idea on what basis they're opposing this plan?
Well, I think you'd have to ask them.
Okay.
I don't want to misrepresent them.
Uh-huh. And I would imagine the media might also be in opposition. It seems like a windfall for the media with all these ads, and print and broadcast media.
Yeah, unfortunately, the way our elections are set up right now, a lot of the cost of the elections is money toward advertising. So it's a tricky situation for a media that's facing restricted revenue to figure out where they stand. It's unfortunate if that's what drives the media away from supporting this. If there's self-interest at the bottom line that causes them to be less open or just neutral on this reform. Fortunately, we do have reporting like KABU that can be more objective.
We don't get those big bucks, do we?
No, we don't. But thanks to people like Therese and Pear, who we have here in the room. If you could wave a magic wand, Kate, right now and make changes to the way we elect candidates, what changes would you personally make?
Well, the first thing I would do is actually enact this reform. It gives candidates the option to run and win viable campaigns with community support instead of big money special interest support, which is exactly what we need. It also changes the way campaigning happens so that candidates are incentivized to reach out and earn the votes of all their constituents rather than focus on a narrow group of special interests that have large campaign contributions to give. There are other things that we could use here in Oregon. We need to pass contribution limits, and we need to get over the court hurdle so we can have full transparency of what money exists in the system.
Well, is the city council going to put forth its own version? Or I heard something about that. You know, there is a ballot measure, and then I heard, I think Amanda Fritz is pushing some kind of a bill. Is there any major difference between the two?
So the bill, the Open and Accountable Elections bill that's being proposed, is sponsored by Commissioner Fritz. She's the lead sponsor of this. She and Mayor Hales have both been kind of co-leading this. And that ordinance is up for discussion right now. It was introduced at the hearing. There will be some discussions over the next few weeks to work out small issues and make some revisions and then bring it back for a second hearing and a vote either at the end of November or the beginning of December.
Oh, Kate, we have time for one more question, and I wanted to ask you how KABU listeners can support Common Cause Oregon and this plan to limit campaign money.
Yeah, absolutely. It is so important that we get involved. The only way that we overcome money in the system and really involve all voices in our democratic process is to involve all voices in our democratic process. We need to exercise our democracy. I think the most important thing that people can do is contact city commissioners. If you have access to a computer, you can just Google the City Council of Portland and get phone numbers, give them a call or email addresses, send them an email or send them a letter, whatever's convenient for you. But reaching out and letting commissioners know that this matters to the public is what's going to get this passed. There are other ways you can get involved, and if you're interested, I urge you to either look up the coalition online. The coalition is called A Voice for All Portland, and you can just Google that and pull up the website with more information, a petition you can sign, or you can call Common Cause and talk to a real human being, and we'll help plug you in. Our number is 503-283-1922.
Oh, thanks again, Kate. That was Kate Titus coming into the KBOO studios live on election eve. She's the executive director of Common Cause Oregon. You could also go online at commoncause.org/state/Oregon.
Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks, Kate. Teresa, can you update us a little? You've got the laptop in front of you.
I can. Shall we talk presidential or shall we talk Senate and
Why don't we start with the presidential and then our way down?
All right. At right now, they're saying Donald. Well, of course, 11% of the states. 12% now are reporting, and it's mostly the Eastern Seaboard, of course, and that shows Donald Trump ahead with 50% of the vote, 15 million and change. Hillary Clinton with 46%, 13.7 million. Gary Johnson with 3%. Jill Stein with 0.7%. And if we turn to the House races, see a lot of red on the map. Looks like most of Florida has gone for Republican House members. Most of Texas, or at least the more rural parts of Texas. Actually all of Texas is either Republican or leaning Republican.
And that's no surprise with the House, gerrymandering.
It's not going to change.
Exactly. That sounds like Rolf Semprebon.
We've got Rolf Semprebon just walked in.
So that gives a total of Republicans.
It's all downhill from here.
That gives a total of 83 Republican seats and 53 Democratic seats at this point. And let's see, moving to the Senate, with 34 of 100 seats up for election. The Democrats have, they've got 40 seats. They need another 11 to win a majority, and the Republicans have got 37. They would need another 14. So the Republicans have got Oklahoma, Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, Kentucky, Indiana, and Ohio.
Oh, Republicans have Indiana? So Birch Bayh, they're projecting as losing in Indiana?
Yes. And
that's a surprise.
Mm.
And North Dakota, Arkansas, Georgia, and North Carolina are leaning Republican. And Vermont, Connecticut, and Maryland have got Democratic senators, or at least that's a projection. And New Hampshire is leaning blue.
Good.
Pennsylvania, Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas are leaning blue.
Good.
And let's see, that brings us to the governor's race. And the only one that's actually been won is Delaware. Delaware has gone with a Democratic Governor John Kamey, and they're saying that he has won.
Any reports from North Carolina? That's where they have the governor who supported the HB2 bill.
North Carolina is leaning blue at this point. Mm-hmm. And Cooper and McCrory. Cooper showing 52% right now with a million five coming in. And Pat McCrory showing 47% with a million three.
Now, do you know if the poll, when I sat down here at 5 for the news before I came in, I had heard that they extended voting in North Carolina, at least in certain precincts, 1 hour due to malfunctions with some of the voting machines there. But the voting is over there now. It's about 9 o'clock there, their time.
I think that's the case. And I remember seeing something about that, but I can't be absolutely specific right now.
You're giving us a lot of information there. A lot of data is coming in.
Well, it's it was interesting listening to a discussion of election finance and the media. Every time I come out to do this sort of thing, I think about all the things that get in the way of actually getting a Democratic vote. And my gestalt of the whole thing is that we don't have democracy, and it would be nice to get there. Every presidential election, we're subjected to gestures and homilies intended to generate a sense of gratitude that we are able to vote. And the implication is that we live in a democracy where we select our leaders and policies, and I think that's just simply untrue. I mean, here's some of the reasons. Corporate-owned media is four square against understanding of global warming, against understanding of capitalism itself, against mention of imperialism, against the description of the apartheid mass incarceration state that we live in. And so these things are simply off the board. There's no voter holiday. There's no weekend to vote. There's only one day to vote. There's no federal law forcing employees to allow voting. All election ads are pay to play, effectively squelching non-capitalist dissent. And then you've got Citizens United making that even worse. You've got no effective restriction on buying elections by paying off candidates. Voting machines in many states are easily hackable. Paper ballot counting machines can be rigged to throw out or miscount votes, ask me. Yeah. Voter caging schemes are rampant. The no forwarding scam, the interstate cross-check that Greg Ballast reports. Gerrymandering guarantees white minority rule via Republican Congress. Felony no voter laws disenfranchise anyone subject to the injustice system, and especially blacks who are overrepresented because they are overtargeted. And intimidation is happening at the polling places. There are signature challenges even here in Oregon. And there are special rules even to get on the ballot, allowing the Democratic and Republican parties to have a duopoly. National debates are restricted to Republicans and Democrats. So if you can jump through all that, you can have a vote.
So I guess in some way we really are exceptional, aren't we?
American exceptionalism. I was going to say, in some way, it seems that the election is rigged. Maybe not exactly.
In many, many ways, yes. Yeah.
I think it's a very professionally. Tilted. Yeah, very professionally.
Maybe tilted.
Yes.
Nudged. Nudged.
Rigged is the word.
Now, Rolf, you're a New Hampshire native, right?
Yeah, I grew up in New Hampshire.
What's up with New Hampshire, with the politics there? It seems like somewhat evenly divided between Republican,
well,
Democrat, somewhere in the middle.
Well, when I grew up, it was very Republican, actually. I think what happened was when Bush got elected, it kind of became more of an evenly divided, just because people there are very kind of libertarian, but they're not very religious. So if they don't like they tend to not like the religious leaders so much, you know.
And
people,
it's a live free or die.
Yeah, live free or die is the license plate.
You only have two choices in New Hampshire, right?
You either live free or die, and that's on every license plate in New Hampshire. They have zero income tax, no sales tax. They pay their legislatures, I think, like when I was growing up, I remember $200 a year is what you get paid. So obviously, unless you got, you know, pretty wealthy or got some other thing going, that, you know, you're not going to, yeah, a working person is not going to be in the legislature of the New Hampshire.
It seems unlikely.
Okay.
Well, there's what sort of topics are we going to now at the top of the
hour? Teresa, I just want to say you're listening to KBOO, not just you, Teresa, but everybody who's tuning in right now. You're listening to a KBOO Evening News special coverage.